May it please the court. Per the U.S. Supreme Court, suppression should always be a court's last resort, not its first impulse. Consistent with this principle, the trial court should have redacted this warrant, or should have held that the exclusionary rule does not apply. Redaction involves striking from a warrant any severable, invalid clauses, and only suppressing the evidence seized pursuant to those invalid clauses.
You have referenced multiple times warrant. In this case, the problem was with the application, not with the warrant. And so do the legal principles that you're applying apply equally when the circumstances are intentional falsity in an application for a warrant, not just a problem with the warrant?
Well, there was no intentional falsity in the affidavit. The affidavit listed items to be seized. They particularly described those items. They were all the property of Ms. Garrett. It was the laptop and the jewelry, various purses and items of hers. There was no mention in the affidavit of a deceased body. That was the issue with the warrant. The warrant, there was a box checked on the warrant for which there was no probable cause.
Was it the application or the warrant itself that had the
box? Wasn't there a box checked in the application for the warrant?
No, there was no box checked in the application. It was only the warrant.
I thought it was the police officer who checked the box.
Well, the police officer apparently checked the box on the actual warrant itself. There's a top part of the warrant that's pre-printed that says, the court finds probable cause to search for and seize these items. And then there's five categories of items. And the box.
So the police officer filled it out for the.
It appears he did, yes. And then below it says then the court authorizes a search for the following items, and that's where the particularly described items are listed. And all those particularly described items were also set forth in the affidavit.
Counsel, in your argument, in your brief, you talk about a number of cases which suggest you can strike out the bad sections, but those are not cases where we found it was bad faith or not good faith. Can you address why that would apply in a case where someone intentionally checked something, as the officer testified he did here, that he knew was not the case because he didn't want to have to go back for another warrant?
Well, it's consistent with how we treat the application for warrant process in terms of in Franks v. Delaware, where when an officer intentional falsehood is put in the affidavit, we don't render the entire warrant necessarily invalid based on the officer's intentional falsehood.
Have you found a case like this where there was an intentional falsehood which didn't throw out the whole warrant?
There is no case cited that I could find or that respondent has cited in which a court has said, based on any misconduct or bad faith of an officer, we're not going to redact this warrant.
Have you found any that did?
No.
So neither way?
Right.
So there's no authority, in fact, that would support, you're asking us to only redact it, but there's no case that's done that in the case of bad faith.
There is no case that has said here there has been bad faith and we are not going to redact the warrant, or there has been bad faith and we are going to redact the warrant. There hasn't been cases where the court has recognized an officer's bad faith in terms of redaction analysis.
Well, what about the case from the Eighth Circuit, U.S. versus Fitzgerald?
Well, all those cases talk about what would happen if there were maybe officer misconduct or bad faith, and that's all dicta. Every case that's been cited in terms of, well, if there was some action on the officer that indicated an abuse of this redaction doctrine, then perhaps redaction wouldn't be warranted in that case. But they've all been dicta. There hasn't been a case which has said, here is an officer's behavior, and because of this behavior, we're going to wholesale say we're not going to redact this warrant.
Has there been any dicta your way saying it wouldn't matter to us if it were bad faith, we're still only going to redact it?
Well, if you look, the state cited a few cases in its brief, in its opening brief and its reply brief, in which courts have said we are redacting this warrant, and then any evidence that we are that was seized pursuant to the invalid portion of the warrant, we're not going to let that in under the Leon good faith exception.
Is that the severance doctrine?
Well, severance and redaction are the same. They just use different terms.
Yeah, but those are cases without bad faith.
Well, those are cases, in terms of the court saying, well, there wasn't good faith, we're not going to let in certain evidence under the good faith exception pursuant to Leon. So what the court's doing is it's redacting the warrant, and then it's saying, well, we don't believe that this evidence that we are saying is seized pursuant to the invalid portions should be admitted under the good faith exception pursuant to Leon. So that indicates that redaction is available, even if evidence
is. Well, they're saying even if you're in good faith, you don't get to put in the parts that weren't supported. That's what that's saying. But if you were in bad faith, is there anything that says, is there any case that says you can get it in?
There's cases that don't discuss it, that merely discuss redaction without addressing. So no, there's no cases that specifically say we're holding this way. But that's because there doesn't seem to be any cases where an officer has acted in bad faith. And then the
it's a pretty amazing statement that he just made it up.
It was an intentional misstatement, yes.
Can you address, there's a dissent in the Western District opinion, I think it was written by Judge Pfeiffer, who talked about by checking that box, it really expanded the scope of the warrant, almost made it into a general warrant, because by looking for any part of a deceased human fetus or corpse, that really would include like any microscopic particle, you know, that attaches to maybe even DNA. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it a really broad general search warrant.
And I have two responses to that, Your Honor. First, I don't think this warrant has been read as to allow microscopic DNA testing. The warrant says human fetus, corpse, or part thereof. I don't think that there was any indication from the officers or anywhere from the defendants in their motion to suppress that the officers expanded the scope of the search such that they could search for microscopic particles and use DNA.
What does any part mean? Wouldn't that include something as small as a microscopic part?
I don't think logically it does. I don't think that when someone says any part of something in a warrant, it means you can start doing special testing to find something very, very small. But even if it meant that it was that small, that doesn't make this a general warrant, because a general warrant is a warrant that allows for an unbridled rummaging. It means that the officers are deciding what to look for, not the neutral magistrate who's signing the warrant. And here, if that's what the officers were looking for based on the warrant, then they were looking for a specific item. They weren't deciding what to look for. Otherwise, every warrant that allowed for a very, very, very small search, such as human DNA, would be a general warrant. And that's just not the case.
Is there any evidence that the officers looked anywhere that they wouldn't have been authorized to look by the good parts of the warrant?
No. And the warrant authorized a search of very, very small places. The officers are looking for earrings. They're looking for a key. They're looking for an ID. So anywhere the officers could have validly searched for the evidence that was supported by probable cause, they also could have searched for a very, very small part of a human.
Can you address how we should be affected by the fact that the prosecutor here appears to have done no investigation and just assumed that provided an excuse for not providing a receipt when, in fact, a receipt was provided, which would have been found out had there been an investigation, but he made up an excuse for why one was not provided instead, and also made up an excuse that turned out to be contrary to fact in another part of what he said to the court. So he was misrepresenting to the court why the warrant had the incorrect statements that it had, and that's very concerning to me that an officer of the court would conduct no investigation and just say something that he make assumptions, and because the court has to rely on what's provided to the court as being accurate.
I understand, Your Honor, and I'm not sure why the prosecutor represented that way to the court in terms of the investigation that was done by the officer. But I think by the time that the suppression hearing occurred and the officer was examined, that I think it was clear to the court what actually happened.
But shouldn't that affect our analysis, that not whether I call it bad faith or not, misrepresentations to the court about the record, affirmative misrepresentations, are really serious misconduct?
Well, I think that's separate from the issue that's here, which is the police officer's conduct, and there was no record made as to why the prosecutor did.
Does it matter?
I don't know if it's misconduct or misrepresentation or just something that happened it's not any part of the record.
But it can't just be something that happened if it was affirmative misstatements.
I'm not sure that the prosecutor made affirmative misstatements, Your Honor. But I think the real issue here is the officer's conduct, and that what he did here in terms of redaction is just, it shouldn't create a rule that redaction is not available based on an officer's actions such as here.
The purposes of the exclusionary rule are preserving the integrity of the judicial system, mm-hmm. and deterring official misconduct. Do you agree with that?
Yes, those are some of the purposes.
Pardon me?
Those are some of the purposes, yes.
And what other purpose?
That the defendant should be either acquitted or found guilty upon all the evidence that is related to the crime. There's also the fact that sometimes guilty defendants go free when evidence is suppressed based on the exclusionary rule.
So, and if in fact purposes of it are preserving the integrity of the judicial system and deterring official misconduct. Wouldn't that weigh in favor of excluding this evidence?
It doesn't. I don't think it outweighs the substantial societal cost of suppressing this evidence. When here we have a search warrant that, if there had not been one box checked on the search warrant, all the evidence seized would have been valid and should not have been suppressed. And the fact that this box was checked had no effect on the search. If the officers had found a fetus corpse or part thereof, they could have seized it under the plain view doctrine. So a box is being checked that has no effect on the search. It doesn't expand the scope of the search. There's no unlawful intrusion here to the defendants. There was an officer who obtained an affidavit. He took the affidavit to the judge. The neutral judge looked it over, made errors to the, made corrections to errors on the warrant, obviously missed the fact that this box was checked, signed the warrant, and then there was the search and seizure at the defendant's home. There was no evidence seized pursuant to this checkbox, this corpse clause checkbox. And all the evidence seized were found pursuant to the valid portions of the warrant. When you consider these facts in their entirety, the exclusionary rule should not be applied. Looking at cases that have applied the exclusionary rule, defendants cite to Mapp and Weeks. In both of those cases, the officer's conduct was patently unconstitutional and completely different from what occurred here. There was no search warrant. The officers broke into the home. The defendants weren't present. So when you look at those types of cases in which the exclusionary rule has been applied, this is
not. You're
not
saying this was okay, are you?
I'm sorry?
You're not saying what the officer did here was all right.
Correct. I'm not saying that. He did something that he should not have done. But this, the Supreme Court has also said that everything which deters officer misconduct is not required by the Fourth Amendment. And really, the courts have created a balancing test in the recent 20 years in that they weigh the officer's conduct against the cost of suppressing this evidence.
Well, they look at the good faith of the officer, but I don't know if cases saying that in a bad faith situation like this.
Well, what the U.S. Supreme Court has done is said, I see my time's up, can I answer
the
question? Is that we look at the officer's misconduct and we weigh it against the costs, and how flagrant the misconduct was is an assessment of it, the balancing test. That's one of the assessments we consider. And so the court does consider the flagrancy of the officer's misconduct in determining whether evidence should be suppressed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. About 8 months ago, I had my first son, and since he's my first kid, I've been granted the liberty of being able to do some kind of absurd things, such as taking a little journal note where I'm telling him kind of what I'm doing with my life. And I've put nothing in there about this case, because to me this case is embarrassing. I don't want to have to write in that journal that I came down to the Supreme Court to argue whether the police get to lie to judges when they're obtaining a warrant. And then when that lie is discovered, the prosecutors get to invent a fantasy situation that would justify that lie. And then when that fantasy situation is discovered, then the Missouri Supreme Court could possibly be saying, it's not a big deal. And to me, that's what this case is about, is whether the police are supposed to be telling the truth when they go and talk to judges and obtain search warrants. I think the state's argument in their opening briefs and their reply briefs is that this is just a little bad faith. That's cool. And I can find no case which argues that a little bit of bad faith is okay. The state makes a lot of circuitous arguments, I think, when they say, in one section of their reply brief, they say that Officer Estes was not, quote, disingenuous, and then they cite to Merriam-Webster as to the definition for disingenuous, and essentially implying what I would call puffery. They're saying that Officer Estes checking this was so egregious and it was so obvious that he didn't have any duty to call the court's attention to this lie that he had in his argument. Then, later, as said during their argument and in their briefs, the state has said that Officer Estes' conduct wasn't flagrant because he obtained a warrant from a neutral judge that evaluated whether there was probable cause. However, in the previous section, they're admitting that there are lies in the warrant, and they're implying that the judge that signed this warrant was essentially asleep at the wheel and didn't catch this horrible lie that was in the warrant. And at some point, a line must be drawn where you're not allowed to do this.
Counsel, could the court have issued more than one warrant?
Could it have issued more than one?
Could it have issued a search warrant for the laptop, a different search, a different piece of paper for the laptop case, a different piece of paper for the ID cards, the glasses, and the keychain?
A different warrant. Yes, the court could have issued a separate warrant or a different warrant, or I think could have done a warrant for each of the 9 things that were listed as potentially having been stolen from the. Would
your argument be the same if there had been a separate warrant for each item, and only the warrant with respect to the body and fetus parts would then have been unsupported under your analysis?
I guess you're saying if each of these warrants, then there had been a 10th warrant that said. I think my argument would be the same, that this warrant was issued based upon a lie. The officers were permitted to go in and search for this dead body that doesn't exist and they don't have probable.
But you would argue that we should suppress the evidence that was searched for and seized under the perfectly lawful warrants 1 through 8.
Yes. I think even that's sort of the argument that happens under a more standard, normal redaction clause doctrine, is you sort of separate it out into their elements. As if it had been maybe 10 different warrants. I think in my case, I've also argued that 2 other boxes were checked for which there was no probable cause, and that's another reason to support this. So. In that case, my argument would be, 9 good warrants and 3 bad warrants. But also, as I've argued, it seems a little unfair that the state is couching it in terms of the stolen property, and there's these 9 pieces of stolen property, and so that's 9 verse 3 or 9 verse 1, whereas it's 9 verse, as I said in my brief, I don't mean to be macabre, but that parts of a body could be hundreds of parts of a body, and I don't think it's being completely honest with the analysis to split it up in that way.
Is part of your concern that if we split it up and allow redaction, then there's no incentive to tell the truth because you can throw in lies, and if they get thrown out, the good parts are still there, and so. When it's offered in bad faith, no case has said anything asked for in the warrant could come in, because otherwise there's no it doesn't perform what an exclusionary rule is supposed to do by trying to dissuade police officers from making things up when they're applying for warrants.
And I believe that Judge Witt, in his dissenting opinion, made that point, and I've argued that point vehemently many times at the Western District and here, that shaking your finger at the prosecutor and saying never do this again, but this time it's okay.
But I mean, that's the purpose of the exclusionary rule. It's not that you'd otherwise have to do it. It's because you need to discourage police misconduct.
Yeah, and that's what the purpose of the exclusionary rule is, and that's the reason why we never even get to the redaction clause in this case, or the redaction doctrine in this case, I argue, because the first hurdle you need is good faith to even start redacting from the document in the first place. And this, the state has argued that this, excluding all of this evidence would be inconsistent with this court's approach dealing with officer misconduct and other warrant cases. And I think that that's a little interesting. Why do we even need an entire body of law dealing with officer misconduct and applying for warrants? And I think the reason that this body of case law exists is because we've sort of missed the idea that when a search warrant is bad, everything is supposed to be excluded, because that stops this officer misconduct. We create exception and exception and exception, and that's how we end up with an entire body of case law justifying officer misconduct and search warrants.
But the difficulty in this case, and I think it's evidenced in the Court of Appeals opinions, is that here, well, where in the cases applying the exclusionary rule, is there a case applying it where there wasn't an unconstitutional search or an unconstitutional seizure? You know, the misconduct and bad faith that went into the issuance of the warrant, if that warrant had never been executed, I don't think he would be making this argument. And so what about this search exceeded the lawful bounds, violated the Constitution, because it looks like none of the evidence that was seized outside the proper bounds, and that none of the actual search conducted exceeded the proper bounds.
I think first, as the state has argued, the touchstone of the Fourth Amendment is reasonableness. So the first question, I guess, or the first thing that I would say in response is it reasonable to let an officer come into court and admit that he lied to a judge to obtain a warrant and then give him the benefit of the doubt that he didn't exceed the scope of the warrant, that he stayed within the scope of, he was only searching for the coach purse, when I found the coach purse, I left. I think that that's unreasonable. And the point is, so he's got this search warrant that authorizes the search for items for which there is no probable cause, and we're giving him the benefit of the doubt that he will only search for the dead body if he ends up having probable cause to search for a dead body. And that's essentially, to me, that's a blank check. And why are we issuing search warrants anyway? Why are we not just saying, I trust you, Officer Estes, you'll only search for things that you want to get, and we vest him with the authority to just go search for things for which there is probable cause.
But the trial court could believe the officer that that is the scope of the search that was actually conducted, correct?
The trial court could believe, and that would be a factual finding that I think would be untouchable at this point in the standard of review. But I don't think that a finding in that respect was made. And I think the point is that, again, it's one of the purposes of the exclusionary rule is to stop this behavior in the first place. And saying that this search was okay will do nothing to stop this behavior. The Horsey case out of the Southern District and a number of federal cases say that, you know, one of the parts of the analysis is that we're not going to redact if it certainly, I think they said smells like, if it smells like the officer is abusing the fact that, worst case scenario, they're going to cross out the things that I didn't have probable cause for, and I can go search for it. And I think that's the point. In this case, even if we were to assume that the scope of the search didn't go beyond looking for the coach purse and the earrings, the problem is everything to do with this search warrant was bad from the start. And I am drawing a blank on the case that I cited, but there was it was interpreting the Leon good faith requirement as what would be possibly another reason to suppress this search, is that in that case, the officer knew that the search warrant that he was obtaining was being obtained in a way that authorized the general rummaging, where they went through the house, and I believe in a footnote I dropped that that's the one where they seized a lead pipe because it was valuable. And in that same vein, Officer Estes knew when he was filling out this affidavit and checking these boxes that he was obtaining a general search warrant, and he had the right and authority to go on a general rummaging throughout the house. And that's not good faith, that he went and then executed this search warrant. And I think, you know, that's another, there's, I think it's probably not the main point of the briefing, but I think that the Leon argument, the lack of jurisdiction argument, and there's a number of other reasons why this search warrant was invalid and the evidence seized could have been or should have been suppressed. And I think I do agree with the state. I know the state was questioned on it. this court would be venturing into new territory. The cases, I think we've both cited, there's a bunch of cases on both sides, or there's a bunch of cases which say that they're not going to redact if it was bad faith, but I've yet to find any cases that actually did find bad faith and thereby refused to redact. And I think it's in part because this is such a strange circumstance. However,
so do you agree with opposing counsel that the statement made in the Eighth Circuit case was dicta?
I think that the statement made in the Eighth Circuit case likely is, I don't think it's dicta because they're saying that there must be good faith before they're going to redact, and then they go on to redact. And I think part of that is some analysis of whether or not there was good faith. They don't do the good faith analysis on the record. And so in some respects there, I think you could argue that it, since it wasn't argued, it wasn't something that was before the court, and that could be considered dicta. And I guess I'm not entirely sure what would be dicta and what wouldn't be dicta necessarily in that situation.
You're saying implicit in saying you have to have good faith to redact is that if you don't have good faith, you don't redact?
Yes, that would be that at some point there was some sort of analysis done by the court that there was good faith, or the parties didn't argue that there was bad faith, and so it was just it was accepted or waived that, you know, good faith or bad faith was present in that case. And I guess the one last thing I did mention in my brief is that while the Missouri's Constitution has been interpreted to be coextensive with the Fourth Amendment in these cases, this court does have the authority to break with the Fourth Amendment. And if this court were to interpret that federal case law interpreting the Fourth Amendment does not require good faith to do redaction, I think that this court should find that a reason to break with Fourth Amendment case law and find that the Missouri Constitution requires good faith before Missouri is going to adopt this particular redaction doctrine, and I believe that that is within the authority of this court to do at this time. If there's no other questions, thank you.
Thank you.
Redacting a warrant involves necessarily suppressing any evidence seized pursuant to police misconduct. If an officer checks a box or indicates that there is probable cause for something and there is no probable cause for that item, then that item will be suppressed because it's not seized pursuant to a constitutionally valid section of the warrant. So there is here no incentive for Detective Estes to keep checking this box. It's not going to get him anything.
Well, why did he do it?
Honestly, it sounds to me like he was just incorrect on what he thought the warrant procedure was.
It was pretty clear that he didn't think he'd find anything, but he didn't want to hit.
Right, and that's
to cover it.
And that's incorrect. You can't do that. That's not allowed. So, but if he had found something, he would have had to get a warrant to continue investigation anyway. He's not going to get something he couldn't have got by checking this box. And so when you consider that with the fact that all the evidence seized here was pursuant to the valid parts of the warrant supported by probable cause and particularly described, then here this evidence should not be suppressed, the evidence of Ms. Garris's property that was found in the defendant's home. If Your Honors have no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case will be submitted.